Hello there, this is episode 72 of the Van Hemlock Podcast, part of the Virgin Worlds Collective.
Everybody,
hello again.
I've always wanted the Dr. Nick.
Awesome.
Yes, we're back.
Yes, back with a topic show for the first time in quite a while.
Yes.
Since I burnt out of Operation Cheap Seats and did my noggin in with far too many free trials in one go. And you got some indie games to talk about.
Shall we start with indie games?
Let's kick off with those then.
Right, what I did this week.
Yes.
I reviewed four competition winners.
Competition winners, right. Okay.
Microsoft have various competitions throughout the year for game design where people submit a indie game and the good ones are great and the bad ones are awful.
Right. Okie dokie. They have like a Raspberries award, do they, for a really bad wooden spoon entry?
No, but they really should.
Right.
The first game.
Yep.
Is Atom Hex.
Atom Hex. Okie dokie.
Which is basically,
yeah,
you have atoms.
Yes.
And you have hexes.
Hexes.
And when an atom and... Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, you have atoms which have hexes attached to them.
Mm-hmm.
And the more hexes it gets, like building up atoms.
Okay.
Yeah. And they combine and they start making bad things.
So an excellent periodic table training simulator.
And you have to shoot them.
Right.
This is a twin stick shooter.
Yeah. A bit like that I Made a Zombie game.
Yeah.
One.
Mm-hmm. Which really, really, really wants to be another game.
Right.
Basically, you can shoot them anything which is the same colour of you.
Okay.
Much like Ikaruga.
I have no idea what that is, but
I just thought I'd throw that in because you have no idea what that is.
Good stuff.
And you can change colour by, if you shoot down the shields on a hex,
yep,
and pick it up, you pick up that colour.
Uh-huh.
And also power-ups you can get. Now, I've made a couple of notes here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one, very much a Geometry Wars game.
I think I sort of know what Geometry Wars is, vaguely.
It's a very neon, top-down, twin-stick shooter with lots of special effects and stuff.
Okay. Sort of asteroids on steroids sort of thing.
The next note of it was, not sure what it offers that Geometry Wars doesn't.
And apart from being much cheaper, I suppose.
The third one was, looks very much like Geometry Wars style-wise.
Right, so Geometry Wars then, all in all.
Very much so.
Right, good stuff.
Yes. Also, it's single player only.
Yep.
And the soundtrack's not that great.
Oh, fair enough.
Now, it's an okay game.
Yeah, despite all those things you just said.
I'd rather have Geometry Wars, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is very much a clone of a game than an original concept in its own right.
And it's okay and it's competent and stuff.
Yeah.
It's only 80 points, so it's not too bad.
Okay.
It just doesn't really seem to offer anything to the genre that hasn't been done before.
So technically quite good, but lacks a certain spark of quirky originality that perhaps we're coming to start to expect in the indie games category.
I think maybe. So, yeah.
Hmm.
Next is a game called Biology Battle.
Biology Battle.
Now, this is a top-down twin-stick shooter.
I'm spotting a theme here.
Yes. In which you're a nanobot shooting viruses inside a cell.
Oh, okay. That sounds novel.
That's novel, quite nice.
I'm trying to think if there's other games that have done this sort of microbiology shooter type of thing. It sounds vaguely familiar, but can't be that prevalent, or I'd remember. But
yeah.
Mm.
This is 240 points, so I'd expect a bit more.
Okay.
This offers multiplayer.
Ah, that's important.
Which is good.
Yeah.
Local and online, and also global high scores.
Okay.
But it's still very much a Geometry Wars ripoff.
There we go again.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And again, you'd be better off buying Geometry Wars because it's not quite as good.
Right. Can you, just that sort of tangent, can you actually get Geometry Wars on the Xbox?
Yeah.
360 there?
Yeah. Is
it available in the shop?
It's available for download.
Right. And how many points cost, whatever?
More than 240, but not too great.
Right. I see. So you're the thing you're imitating is already there in the same service anyway.
Yeah.
Mm, that's a problem.
Yeah. People, stop making Geometry Wars. It's been made.
I need to play Geometry Wars, clearly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes.
At this stage, I thought I'm spotting a pattern here.
Yeah.
And decided to try something called Blow.
Right.
Which is more expensive at 400 points.
Okay.
Now, what Blow is, is you have to get a bubble from one side of a level to another.
Ah, okay.
Going via flowers.
Flowers?
Yeah.
Right.
That's made it sound a lot more obscure than it really is. What it is, you've got to blow bubbles across the screen using fans.
Oh, right.
And you have to tag a flower bud on the way past, which causes the flower to open. Uh-huh. And if you get all the flowers, then the exit opens.
Ah, that sort of reminds me of, there was a game, I can't even remember what it's called now, we had a laser beam and you had to keep manipulating mirrors to get the laser to hit the end target.
Yeah, quite like that.
Yes, I forget what it's called now. But
you've got fans which you can give a certain amount of power to, so strong to weak. And you have to basically bounce your bubbles across. Once you've joined it up so it gets there, you hit the back button and the king bubble comes out and it goes to the exit.
Okay. Oh, so you have a number of bubbles to try run it out.
Yeah, you have an infinite number of bubbles going all the time to try it out.
But if the king bubble misses, you lose, do you?
Yeah.
I see, fair enough.
Now, you also have temperature. Fans or areas in the screen can make bubbles hot or cold.
So you can make thermals and
hot
things.
Bubbles go up, cold bubbles drop.
Uh-huh.
And it's a puzzle game.
Yeah.
And I bought it.
Right. Well, there you go. There's your recommendation.
I mainly bought it because I was working through the tutorial and I got to the third match.
Yeah.
And
just enjoying it and wanted more.
And the trial ran out. But just when I got to the stage where I was allowed to actually play stuff where I wanted.
Yeah, fair enough.
But that's a Microsoft...
you get a lot of that. But you figured this one was worth a go?
It's insanely addictive.
Right.
You get more points for the longer you take to get the bubble across the level.
Oh, I see. So you get more elaborate routes.
Basically, if you just blast it through, you get less points than if you don't. It's a very, very slow-paced puzzler.
Yeah. There's a place for that, certainly.
It has great music, great visuals, and I could definitely see this as a full price game.
How many levels? Because the thing with puzzle games is you only have a certain finite number of puzzles, and when you're done with those,
see how many there were.
But enough to keep you going for a good couple of hours or two.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, you could spend a couple of hours on being stuck on a level quite happily.
Right, yeah.
So yeah, that's 400 points, and I recommend then people take a look at it.
You like that one? Okay,
I like it indeed. And the final game.
Yep. What else we got?
Is Megalopolis.
Oh right.
Which is again 400 points.
Yep.
Now, this is a building game. You have to build a city by building houses, supplying them with water and power.
Sort of SimCity-ish.
Sort of SimCity-ish, yes.
Yeah.
And when a house has both water and power, you gain cash from it. Until that point, you don't.
Okay.
Yeah. And in fact, it costs you money.
Hmm.
Now, the whole game has an environmental aspect. If you generate too much CO2... then global warming kicks in and the sea levels rise and you drown.
Ah, right.
Which is an interesting mechanic because you have to plant trees and balance out the rubbish power generation you've got.
Ecological aspect that's perhaps missing from SimCity.
Yeah, it more importantly, it keeps you in check as you build stuff because you can't just go nuts with the
Do you have a bank balance to fund it all? Because that's usually the lever that's supplied to you in SimCity.
You have a bank balance and you make money from having correctly arranged houses with all the power it needs and water. Now, interestingly, if you supply an area with water, people will build slums on it if you're not quick enough.
Right.
Which generates a lot more CO2 and costs you money as well. You have to be careful when you're expanding to actually expand
manage
as much
your population
as you can
with a brutal iron
bit.
Fist.
And, yeah, manage your population with a brutal iron fist.
Right.
And you also, when you're expanding, you cut down trees, which stops your CO2, makes your CO2 worse, of course. So you can also plant more trees to make it better.
So it's very much a sort of a management style game where you're balancing a number of different values.
If you
needs.
Totally ignore the environmental aspect, it is a management game where you're just having to manage your...
Manipulate levers to ensure the correct balance of a particular situation.
All you're effectively doing is manipulating your pollution like you had to do in SimCity.
Yeah.
Now, the game doesn't get much more complicated than that.
Well, yeah. I mean... 400 points indie game, it's going to be quite a simplistic cut down version of SimCity.
No roads or anything you put down,
right.
It is just the several types of buildings.
So ecological message notwithstanding, is it fun?
Yes.
Oh, right. Well, that's good.
Now, the trial...
It's one thing to be lectured at. It's quite another to be enjoying the lecture.
I never thought lectured at all while playing it.
Oh, that's good. Because, I mean, a lot of these games where that attempt to dabble with the political messages or the ecological messages, it can all get a bit sort of book-thumping and in your face.
Yeah.
And you didn't find that with this?
No, the trial mode doesn't have its story mode, which is just basically a series of challenge levels.
Oh, okay. So just a demo, basically.
It has the free play mode and stuff.
Oh, okay.
So you can do what you want in it. But
Microsoft stomp on it 10 minutes in and say, buy it. Yeah, fair enough.
And I did actually buy this one as well.
Oh, okay. So that's another good recommendation there, then?
Yeah, if the graphics are upped a bit and the music fleshed out a bit and the sound effects, I could see this being sold quite happy as well.
As a proper game, yeah. So look out for perhaps some revised version, perhaps.
Yeah, so Blow and Megalopolis. Great. Take a look at them.
You picked the two 400-point titles.
I know.
Is it people have a more realistic sense of the game's worth, or are they just randomly assigning these prices?
I think they realised that they had a bit more than just a quick shoot 'em up.
I suppose you have to compare them against what else is in the marketplace and decide, you know, as objectively as possible, what your game has that others don't, or what other games have that justify them having a higher price. Tricky.
Mm.
I wouldn't know how to price them. Yeah.
But both games are probably worth the cash.
So there we go. That's Blow and Megalopolis. Yeah. We're looking for on the old menus there. Yeah, good stuff.
There'll be links in the show notes, of course, and on websites and stuff.
Uh-huh.
So yes, two good games, two okay games, but there is a better version of them out.
Right. Okay. Good stuff. So more in a fortnight for that.
Yep.
Excellent.
Okay, should we move on to the topic?
Oh, I suppose we'll get on with the topic then. Yeah.
What's our topic?
Our topic this week is story. Story in games, stories, narrative, etc., plot, backstory, that kind of thing. I forgot who suggested it now, which is terrible of me.
Yeah,
that came off of our Twitter list last show. So I've done a big old bullet pointy list because I get terribly rambly if I don't have some sort of plan. Right, ready?
Okay, ready?
Go.
I've engaged the story.
There we go. Right. Do you want to explain what the hell you're talking about while I look through my notes?
I'm just starting a new game of Metal Gear Solid 4.
Yes.
And I've now put the controller down.
Right, okay. So this will be opening cutscene as we work through.
Yes, okay.
Right, okay. Then So, I've written... The first thing I've written is Games versus Stories, Why? Now, I'm not quite sure what I meant by that, but I'm guessing that something to do with puzzle versus arcade versus RPG. Why should a game need a story at all? What the hell am I looking at here?
It's the intro.
Right, fair enough. So story is clearly not required for a game to happen. I mean, games like chess, draughts, Tetris, you know, these sorts of things. Games where abstract tasks, manipulating blocks, that sort of thing, general knowledge quizzes, whatever. There's not generally a need for a story for a game to happen, but many games are enhanced by having a story component added to them.
Yeah, I'm paying attention, yes. I'm not staring at the cookery.
Yes, your PlayStation's crashed now.
No, that's just it signing up the network because the wireless doesn't work properly on them. So what we're basically looking at is story in games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we both like certain games because they have a strong story.
Hmm.
And there's also games out there which may not have the world's best story in them.
Hmm, it depends very much what you're looking for in the gaming experience. Sometimes I want to literally just move coloured blocks about until they form optimum patterns. Something like Tetris or chess or drafts. Games where story's not required at all. Yeah. There's no narrative background to a game of chess, although you could conceivably write an epic tale based on a particular game of chess.
You could write a whole musical about chess if you wanted to. It wouldn't make it right.
Well, quite. But then there are other times when the computer game, which are all means of passing the time enjoyably, regardless of their type, where I'm looking for something a bit more narrative, something more involving escapism, something that would take me out myself, and something, a journey I can follow, even characters I can empathise with and cheer on, and even to some degree manipulate and aid to reach their goals. And these things are obviously a bit more complex and in depth than, say, a game of Tetris, and this is largely the RPG genre, the role-playing game. Although not always.
I say, let's start with, why do games have a story? Why bother? If Tetris doesn't need it, why bother giving one?
Because many games, I suppose, have gameplay which, without some overriding purpose would seem meaningless and abstract, and at the end of the day, not terribly interesting. If a story-based game tends to place more emphasis on moving a story along, getting the narrative going, moving the character through it, the individual tasks required to carry out at each juncture in the story may not need to be quite as complex, but if on their own merits, if they were standalone games in their own right, they wouldn't be terribly interesting or challenging, I suppose. Because the emphasis is more about moving the player along the narrative journey, I think.
Mm.
But then if there is no pretense at narrative journey, if it's merely an abstract game that needs that will just be played over and over again for its own sake, then, yeah, doesn't need to be tied together or justified by some grand overarching plot.
So, when it comes down to it,
mm-hmm.
you have a reason to play the game, for your character to be doing what they're doing.
It's finding out what happens next. The same reason people watch films or read books or comics.
Well, that's an interesting point there. But all three of those have a completely different pacing on their story.
These are all a medium where a story is also important, yeah.
And this will be stuff like the pacing or the duration.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Graham Lindham said...
Is it Linehan?
Linehan, sorry. Can't read your handwriting.
Sorry.
Said in Gameswipe this week that most games are written like a film.
Yeah, I found that fascinating.
And game developers should read more books.
I think he was using... he might have been using GTA 4 as a specific example. I think also he was talking about Call of Juarez, is it?
Yeah.
And generally, sort of, I suppose, not looking particularly sympathetically on their storylines from the writer's perspective, because he seemed to have reached the conclusion that most people who are designing computer games these days have grown up in a culture where not a lot of book reading happens and where films are the narrative influence. They've grown up watching films as the primary medium of entertainment, and this has informed the way they write, the way they script. And he reckons that shows and is a bit of a loss to the potential of the genre.
Oh, hang on, I've got to hide under a truck.
Yes.
So it's a rare moment of interaction.
We've been letting the introduction of Metal Gear Solid 4 run through as we've been playing, and now it's required some user interaction, which is disappointing.
Yes. So basically, films have a pacing where what is referred to as the three act.
So where this is working off the assumption then that people who are designing computer games are attempting to recreate interactive films, movies.
Yeah.
How does the pacing work?
Well, I don't think that they are, because if you look at... And again, back on a cutscene now. I just had to hide under the truck.
Yes, this is a great item for radio.
If you look at the three-act structure of a film, there's the first quarter setup,
mm-hmm.
the next half is confrontation.
Right.
And then the last quarter is the climatic struggle slash resolution.
Right.
So you've basically got... introduction, where you're telling everything about
setup.
How it is.
Yeah, then here's the world. Here's
the hero running around, fighting around to do stuff. And then,
shooting helicopters, generally.
And in the end, he goes into this big crescendo and beats the bad guy.
Yeah, who's generally a posh English actor.
That does.
Gets a helicopter in the head.
I don't think that's how games are paced, because fit.
This is to do with the peculiarities of the specific medium. A movie is typically 2 hours long, and for a very specific physiological and psychological reason. There's only so long people will sit in a cinema. When's the last film we saw that was 3 hours long? I think it might have been the extended edition of Lord of the Rings or something.
Watchmen.
And was it Watchmen? I remember coming out of there and thinking, God, how long was that?
Yeah.
You know, like, my legs were aching.
Just played again for another 2 seconds. Another
cutscene. Oh, right, okay. Blink and you miss it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and just how long can you sit still and stare at a screen, you know, before your legs start to ache and your eyes start to burst or whatever, you know. There's a particular format for the ideal feature film, which tends to be about 2 hours and has the breakdown you've described. And again, this is studies of audiences, lots of expensive psychiatric research, I'm sure, that's gone into determining a flow and a pacing for a film as well. There'll be a certain amount of time where you want a quiet bit, and then you'll need about X number of minutes of action, then another quiet bit. And this is all mostly to do with how our minds work. the audience will best, most favourably receive a pacing of this particular order. So when that, if that gets applied verbatim to the computer game, how does that even work? How many computer games are 2 hours long? I think you'd feel probably quite cheated.
You'd feel incredibly cheated.
Spent 50 quid on an experience that only lasts 2 hours.
What tends to happen is, if they do this, then the setup's the tutorial.
Yep. So the confrontation's the game. Analog there, yes.
And the climatic struggle at the end.
The boss fight.
Is the final boss fight.
Absolutely.
Which doesn't work, but that's... Yeah, okay.
What tends to happen...
Structured like that.
Yeah, what tends to happen is the section called the confrontation section, which typically occupies the middle half of the movie, gets vastly expanded out to typical, I don't know, 20 hours, 40 hours is a typical computer game.
10, 20 hours or
yeah, something like that. So you end up with a game that's stretched enormously in the middle, and typically... That's done by repetition. You've learnt your lessons during the setup bit, the tutorial. You've learnt how to play. And then, yeah, you will just do these same actions over and over and over and over again. And the plot itself will advance just about enough to create the illusion of progress. But ultimately, the boss battle right at the very end is not going to take up this quarter of the film.
No.
It'll be a far smaller slice of the overall experience. And so the strictures of the medium itself, the computer game being much longer than films, starts to, I think, possibly invalidate using movies as a way of...
Another cutscene.
...creating... We should stop doing that. As creating a narrative plot for a computer game. I don't think the movie is the appropriate analogue to use, I suppose.
No. Now I was thinking about this,
mm-hmm.
and I think that the more appropriate... analogy is comics.
Yeah, you think?
The smaller, episodic, lots happen, builds up to a crescendo, bonf, next episode, you've got the same happening.
Okay, now, so I'm not really a big comic person, but I'm guessing you're sort of dabbling the genre.
Now, of course, it's not true for all comics that, but a lot of them do that.
Right, and so a comic runs on the premise that you will be a reader for a very long time. And how many hours?
Well,
comparable to a computer game? Over a series? Or
well,
come back
it depends. Some of them tend to last for 50, 60 years.
Yeah. Do they come in particular series?
Yeah, they do. They break them up into effectively...
right.
And you can think of a little plot line.
An arc or
an
whatever.
Arc,
yeah,
yes.
Exactly. And those will have episodes that will work through this great long narrative, probably with a number of weekly cliffhangers. Is it mandatory to have a cliffhanger at the end of every episode?
No, not at all, but you tend to have stop-go action in them because you need to keep people interested
and
you're shorter form.
The pace.
Now, Bungie said that the reason why they think Halo is successful is they've worked out the 5 minutes stop-go action.
Right.
Basically, you do a little bit of fighting.
Mm-hmm.
At the end of that, you stop, you recover, then you move on to the next one.
Right.
And with plots, games are like that too. Cards, you're always working towards a task.
Mm-hmm.
Which,
so the game as a whole could be viewed as a series.
Yeah. So what you're doing is you've got a goal,
yeah.
like a quest or whatever.
Missions, etc.
And you
yeah.
do that, then you stop, relax a bit, do the next one, stop, relax a bit.
Yeah. So the stop, go, which
yeah.
I suppose could be drawn as a parallel to episodes of a comic series.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Graphic novels, whatever you want to call them. But yeah, that does seem to ring true. It seems to fit the genre a bit better. And I suppose, yeah, exactly. Bungie saying that people seem to be very receptive to the way they are structuring their stories, which, by the sounds of it, is a comic book-based timing and pacing and duration. Of course, the other analogue is the book, the novel. I'm thinking Planescape Torment here, really, but...
Lotro as well,
Lotro,
probably.
Yeah. Basically, we're talking a large single narrative with chapter structure, again, but with a lot more in the way of sweeping descriptive narrative and in dialogue and a much more intense, specific focus on the story. I mean, I think the big example of the book is the Because the big example, I mean, I'm sort of... Shit. It's gone. Because there's a... When dealing with books, with narrative novels and such like, a bit of research I dug around and found out is on Wiki called the monomyth, which is basically this sort of descriptive narrative structure which originates in the classical Greek literature, describing what's also known as the hero's journey. They sort of the threat is presented, the hero wanders off, discovers inner power, goes on a long journey, confronts the enemy and returns changed and having learned more about themselves and all this sort of thing. And you see that repeated in a lot of the more involved storytelling in movies and computer games, but very much a novel form, I suppose. I don't think the books really work too well as a game analogue, though. That's the problem.
I don't think they do at all, because...
they're very linear, obviously.
They're very linear, and they are a lot longer. And there's a lot you can get away with stuff not happening a lot longer.
And it's all very well for sort of writers like Graham Linehan there to sort of decry the movie structure being applied to the computer game storytelling, and also at the same time laud the praise of books. You know, people need to read more before they go and write stuff. But I wonder, is the novel the appropriate tool to be using to dictate how a computer game plot works as well?
I don't think so. And yeah, I can understand people need to read more in order to write, because you just get exposed to more ideas and you stop being stuck in the same rut of the way to do things. But I can't see the novel being anything like a game.
I think, again, the sort of... it's the restrictions of the medium itself. I mean, let's take Lord of the Rings as an example. That's about 1,000 pages. It will take you, well, it'll take you a variable amount of time to get through, depending on how fast you read and how often. But although perhaps the time taken, perhaps 80 hours maybe more, I don't know, can be comparable to a computer game playthrough, the structure of it itself is very different. You typically have different things going on in every single chapter in a well-written novel, whereas in a computer game, can you expect to have that much, you know, have the game, the very fundamental nature of gameplay itself changing every chapter to a completely different and new game? Would that be well received?
Would it
confuse people?
Some games have done that and it has worked. And I don't just mean you have a vehicle level.
Yeah, the racing level.
Yeah. But when games do go and try and do the linear story and they get bogged down a bit, you get to where we are now, where we're still in the intro cinematic to a game.
Yeah, we'll update.
Although it has asked us to save already.
Has it? Right, yeah. I've been not paying attention really to what's going on
this
screen.
This video has save points.
Right, but then I think the interesting thing with the novel is that you have an additional difference and constraint, which is cost of production. And a good novel will take one guy perhaps a year or two to sit down and write. Usually you'll have a PC to do that with a word processor, and that's that. Whole thing goes off to an editor and is published and produced, yes. But compared to the cost of producing a film, much, much cheaper, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
And then when you apply that again to computer games, again, which, as we're seeing, budgets for computer game production going up and up and up, hundreds of millions as well, and starting to rival movie prices, is it feasible to achieve and convert what people are managing to write down as novels and recreate them as computer games? I think possibly not.
I think you can have the same amount of material.
But if say one scene takes one guy an afternoon to write on a word processor, how long will it take, and how many people to code that into an interactive experience?
It'll take more, of course, and it depends on the environment.
I think books are probably alien to computer game. The writing processes are going to have to be different as well.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Very much so.
And you're writing probably multipath.
Absolutely.
Plots.
So you're writing a many, many novels all at once. I mean, yeah. Planescape Torment, it's famous for having just a huge amount of, I forget the exact number, but a vast amount of dialogue that you just sit there and click and read. And it becomes a sort of choose your own adventure book, but of a far greater scale. And the gameplay on screen almost becomes incidental toward the end, as it becomes more and more of a narrative journey and a metaphysical experience where you're discussing things with NPCs about philosophy and so on, and your character's just stood there and not really moving or doing anything. So it sort of drove people away who weren't that into reading vast amounts of text and wanted a bit more action gameplay. But then again, is always quoted as a a pinnacle of writing, of storytelling. So perhaps different people want different things from computer game narrative.
Oh, I'm sure that's true. Mm. Some people want to read text and some don't, at the lowest level.
Yeah. All right, so let's move on to a few examples then and see what we got.
Yeah.
So at the top of the example list you got here is Metal Gear Solid.
Mark, yes.
Which we're actually looking at here. So we've been playing this opening cutscene since we started this segment. And yeah. Are we there yet?
No, they're in the helicopter. Right, he's just being told what's going on still.
All right, so talk to me about Metal Gear Solid a little bit.
Well, you see, Metal Gear Solid, he says, drop in the controller.
That's all right. It didn't need any interaction yet.
No. It's had a couple of bits. Yeah, it basically has this very, very strong, well-written story that I believe, and other people do as well, quite a lot of people like it, believe gets in the way of the game.
Right. This is the game that had the I remember us laughing about its 90-minute cutscenes. Is this that?
It's the one with the two-hour end cutscene, yes.
Yes. So basically what you got here is a CG movie, basically.
Yeah.
And it's almost like the game they're almost embarrassed about. They had to shoehorn in somewhere. And they had a really good story they wanted to tell, but the only medium available to them.
I don't think they're embarrassed about it. They just wanted to put more plot into a game than running around shooting allows.
Fair enough, yeah. Is that going to put people off, though?
Yes.
So what was the critical reception of this? Generally, people just didn't really...
Lots of people loved it, and there was an awful lot of mocking of the amount of videos in it.
Mm, it's like they couldn't decide if they wanted to make a CGI film or an actual game.
Yeah, and every so often, you have to be prepared to accept that you're going to spend your first 20 minutes of this play session watching a video, or...
We've been going for a couple of minutes now, and we're still in the opening cutscene, are we?
Yeah.
And you've pressed the button, what, three times?
I've moved twice, where it's dictated I had to do it, and it's in opening video still.
Right.
But if you look at, say, the end, which is 2 hours long, you have to start thinking, when am I going to complete this? Because if I know it's going to take 2 hours to do the end cutscene...
Yeah, then, you've got to set aside a whole evening, get a bowl of popcorn, and that's after you've finished the main bit of gameplay.
Yeah.
So,
and clearly, does that rob from the achievement of completing the game? Because you haven't completed the game. The game has completed itself after you had done some actions.
I can see this being very annoying, actually. On the one hand, if you're eager to get on with the gameplay, all this cutscene waffle is far, far too long and will get in the way. On the other hand, if you want to find out about the story, you're going to get annoyed about having to do a driving level like 10 minutes into the movie.
Yeah.
So possibly they're trying to have the best of both worlds here, or just overimpose the movie format onto what should just be a normal computer game.
Now, this isn't a new thing, because if you think back to the classic Wing Commander stuff, where they put lots of full motion video in.
Back in the early days of CD.
And stuff.
Yeah.
And that got criticised for being an interactive movie as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and there were quite a number, I remember at the time, of actual interactive movies. It was basically just a whole series of FMV clips chained together with very Dragon's Lair-style controls.
Yeah.
Mostly because they suddenly had, 700 meg of data storage, and they didn't know what to do with it, so they just started filling it up with cutscenes, with video, basically, which was always, prior to that, very data-heavy and intensive.
And one thing that I fear about the PlayStation is, because you suddenly got all that extra storage,
it's
going to get full up with lots of videos. And here we are still in the intro video.
Yeah. Okay, so I've written Guild Wars and LOTRO here.
Yeah.
MMO story. Yeah. So when story is applied to a single-player computer game, okay, you've got the different challenges of a strange and different media to deal with, but also things get even more complicated when there is more than one hero, which happens in the MMO world.
Yes.
Generally now, MMOs, as any regular listener to the show will know, are generally designed to be played for many, many, many hours. We're talking months and months and months of subscription. And generally, you have the level progression, which takes a very long time. The hero's journey to power is going to take you a year. I don't know, we're at level 50 in LOTRO now. And
we haven't exactly been playing heavily, though.
Well, we're playing perhaps 3 or 4 hours a week, which is what, you know. Well,
that's probably what normal mortals play. Because people have lives. And,
well, exactly.
Yeah,
that's over a feature film a week. for the last 8 or 9 months, and we're only just getting toward the end.
Yeah.
In fact, with this expansion, the end's been moved further away.
Well, the end's constantly a moving goalpost.
Yeah, and with Guild Wars, I've been playing that for 3 or 4 hours again, you know, a sort of feature film a week of that for the last, well, more than a year, I'm sure. And the story we've replayed a number of times. But Lotro and Guild Wars are interesting in that they attempt to mask this and disguise it and it perhaps intersperse the interminable repetition of gameplay in MMOs with an overriding story. There are a series of narrative chapters that you can attempt that have occupied us for quite a number of weeks, haven't they?
Yeah.
And they've told a story, in Lotro's case, it's been a story of the other Fellowship of the Ring. Basically, we've sort of very cleverly shadowing along behind the events in the novel, but with a game style of play. So we've had game tasks to do, whereas Frodo and co. in the novel have been having a big narrative journey with very little in the way of fight
scenes.
This
has always been optional for us, and I can imagine that a lot of people ignore it.
Yeah, or you can just play it as a straight game, just run out into a field and start beating on wolves.
It's not so loreable, so a lot of people who don't want to group up won't have... managed to do anything.
So the idea of a narrative journey as an optional story in Lotro is interesting. Yeah, on the one hand, you have this game. You come to it expecting a game, there needs to be gameplay, and it's there. But as well, you've got this sort of side, almost, I don't know, side narrative thing going on as well, which, and, you know, many of these book quests have been very literal fetch and carry travel quests, but they've advanced this ongoing narrative, which I was a little bit too busy to read at the time.
Yeah.
Which you click through.
That's the problem. I don't think anyone reads it, because you've always got the next thing to do. You're in a group, and you're not waiting for the slowest reader.
Well, the phenomenon of clicking through quest text is widespread and exists in every game, and it makes you wonder, because people complain that there's no story or no depth to these MMOs, that they're all just grind fests, that it's all kill 10 rats, etc., etc. But without actually reading through the quest text, you know, many people probably wouldn't know any different. But then, does it matter at the end of the day why you're killing these 10 rats? The story needs to be a significant part of the world and compelling, and Guild Wars does this very well with its mission structure and the campaign, the flow of characters through the campaign following the main missions. Each campaign tells an ongoing larger story, almost movie-esque in its nature, and yes, in between each little cutscene or mission you have a bit of running around bashing monsters to do, and that serves to, I suppose, I don't want to use the term pad out, but provide gameplay as well as narrative story, because as we've seen with this snake thing. Oh, hello.
We've finished the tutorial.
Blimey. So with this Metal Gear Solid thing, that there is a danger in providing only story and no actual game. So these are games at the end of the day. So there's always going to be a precarious balance between narrative and gameplay, I think.
Yeah, I think.
Conflicting goals that will pull against each other.
Ah, but does there have to be?
Well, perhaps there is a better way. Go on, then talk about Batman and Superman, written down here.
Yeah, Batman, good example of...
So we're talking Arkham Asylum, aren't
we? Yeah, this is Arkham Asylum, and that's a game which has a very nice story, a very strong story, but the story never feels like it's in the way.
Right.
Because it's not very complicated and it's not too big for the game, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It gives you an excuse to go here, do this, do stuff, but doesn't try to...
Gives you a reason for all these rooms being there and all these villains being there. And
it doesn't try and impose anything on top of that beyond what you're doing.
So it has perhaps a sense of its own importance in this grand scheme of things.
And it does feel like a Batman comic.
Which comes back to the sort of comic as the parallel for writing game story design. Yeah.
You feel like you're doing each thing you're given to do feels like it's a distinct chunk.
So an episode of a comic.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see.
Now, if you compare this to Superman Returns game...
Yes.
Which is one of my favourite games ever because of this.
That's his lying face, by the way, listener.
The story on that was shoehorned in afterwards to match what went on in the last film.
So they more or less just knew they were going to do a Superman game, and that was about it, really.
Yeah, and the story got super glued on top of it and never referenced to by what you were doing in-game.
So this is the movie as model for game story.
This is
design.
The worst possible occurrence of the movie as game design. Mm. This is, yes, it needs a story that matches the movie. Let's just put it on top of it and ignore it beyond that.
Yeah, so which is strange because you'd think with a comic book hero like that, the obvious comic book episode design would be the parallel.
Yeah.
I suppose this was the crappy film tie-in game, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, so, very crappy film tie-in
so
game.
The crappy film tie-in game is interesting because right there you have this very explicit design direction. This is a film we want to turn into a game.
And any game which follows plot
yeah.
is doomed to failure.
Yeah, this isn't even a subtle, our game is inspired by movie action movies in general. This is a, here is a specific film and we want you to make a tie-in game for it. So you need a start, middle and end that match the film and then just a bunch of filler, which is generally why you end up with the crappy film tie-in game,
yeah.
why the phrase exists. Because the attempt to transpose the narrative from the movie onto the game is painful at best.
Well, a film narrative doesn't work because in a film you'll have 20 seconds of shooting, where in the game you'll have 20 minutes of shooting.
Yeah, the action scenes get drawn out far longer.
And you could.
Which doesn't work for film pacing.
And because you're not interacting, and you're just observing in a film, the emotional stuff can be said at you.
Yeah.
And you'll get that instead of when you're the character. It's much harder to move any of the emotional or reasons to do stuff.
Yeah.
Beyond that way.
Hmm. Yeah. Okay, so that sort of. So you think the Batman thing does a better job because the story is an optional thing which you can come back to, go away from.
Well, you can't really go away from it. It's always there and you're always meant to be doing it.
Right.
But the story is subtle enough and you don't really have to pay attention to why you're doing these things.
Yeah.
But
it is there
it's
if
there
you want to know.
If you need to, and it doesn't ever try to impose itself onto you.
So we think perhaps story is best as an optional extra in a computer
game. You have to be able to completely ignore the story if you want to play it that
whereas,
way. Because a lot of players do.
Whereas in a movie, a book or a comic, the story is the product.
Unless it's a Michael Bay film.
If you take the story away from a movie, a book or a comic, you're just left with a jumbled
explosions,
random mess.
Big giant robots hitting each other.
Giant robots wrestling, yeah, fair enough. I suppose there's a place for that. Okay, so I've got a sandbox then, which is the ultimate expression of the story as optional. So most sandbox games will have some kind of story.
Oh, they all have a story, yeah.
But almost any point you can just walk away from it and go and do your own thing for as long as you like.
The big problem is with the sandbox stories is you can walk away from it and you never feel like this story is still continuing. It's always a case of, yeah, I'm now off doing the grocery shopping.
You lose
the
sense of urgency. Any sense of threat that had been built up dissipates very quickly if you just, can just wander off and go and do some shopping or look for glowy orbs on rooftops, you know.
Interesting, the game that does still manage, the sandbox game, even when you're out off doing other stuff to make you feel like the overall plot is still going, is Godfather 2.
Okay.
Because in that, what's happening in the background is all of the other families are fighting each other and you, and they're trying to move in your rackets and stuff.
Right.
And so you always feel that every effect that you've had up to that point in the plot is still going on because there's still people fighting. They're still attacking you.
Ah, so...
So your actions have changed the world at that point.
And that's manifest in things going on in the game.
Yeah. And
which is important.
If you take something like GTA, you complete a mission, then go back out on the streets and nothing's changed.
Yeah, yeah. GTA being the big example is the sandbox game. I've not played a lot of it myself, but is there much of a sense of an overriding narrative there, or is it very much here's a city, go crazy, there's some helicopters?
There is a very strong plot in it.
Yeah.
But when you walk away from the plot and do stuff, you do sort of feel like the plot's on hold and you're just off having fun.
I get a lot of that with Prototype, actually, which is, again, another very big
sandbox. It's exactly
game.
That.
There are missions and you have to keep talking to people to keep the plot moving along. And presumably, if you only ever did missions, you could get through the game in a very quick time indeed. But I'm off just flinging cars at helicopters out on the other side of Manhattan. And there's just, you know, there have been times when I've been doing that and I've totally forgotten what stage the story was at. So clearly the narrative has broken down because of the nature of the sandbox.
Yeah.
You walk away because you're bored of the big bad evil threat, and the big bad evil threat's quite happy to wait for you to get interested and come back again. So that's a limitation of computer gaming in general, or the sandbox in particular?
That's a limitation of those sandbox games. Saints Row 2 and Saints Row 1 try and do this and make it a bit better by having the different areas you take over of the city.
Yeah, and the side missions.
Occasionally, you're taking over physical areas. You'll take over this part of the city, and it'll become yours, and your guys will start defending it.
But how transparent is that? I mean, is it presented as you have completed chapter one, now go and collect 100 foozles, then we can get on to chapter two?
No, it's not like that at all.
Because that can be a very bad way for a sandbox game to pad out, well, any game, to be honest.
Well, it is like that, because you have to build up reputation to be able to do these.
I think that happens an awful lot in sandbox games particularly, but I think you see elements of that in computer gaming in general, because a story cannot last 80 hours of interesting and new developments and plot twists and interesting
You've
things.
You've not played a Final Fantasy game, have you?
No, I haven't. No, tell me about that then.
Just have a long story.
Ah, right. But what? So you will play for a vast amount of time and all of it seems to be main narrative? Or are there go away, bash 100 foozles, then come back?
No, there's an awful lot of exploring and just fighting stuff.
I think the nature of the medium... because
travel is an important point in all these games.
Yeah. Well, that's, I think, the downside of the very thing that Graham Linehan was probably talking about. When you're superimposing a movie structure onto a computer game, literally you're stretching 2 hours into 80 hours. You've got to pad it with something.
Well, the comparison you could make is 24.
Yes.
Because you've always had to have action. And games don't quite do what 24 does, which is switch to different people when they need to move the plot along from point A to point B. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't usually see Jack Bauer driving around the city unless it's vitally important that you do.
Right, you're busy looking at somebody else.
Go off and do a bit with the bad guys or some of the other good guys.
I've played some games where you do jump personalities. You'll do a chapter as so-and-so, and then you'll go over to do a bit where someone else is doing.
Well,
interesting idea.
Interesting. Halo ODST does that. You've got your real time wandering around the city trying to investigate what's going on. Then you find the clue and it jumps in time back early in the day where you've got to do the plot of what happened in this specific battle.
Hmm.
Which is an interesting way of doing it. And the plot for that means you've got your wandering around explorey bit.
Yeah.
And you have your distinct plot there. And you never feel that, oh, well, I'm not doing that.
Now I'm off shooting 100 foozles.
I'm not doing the plot because... all that's happened is you haven't found the clue as to what happened earlier.
Ah, so you're sort of approaching the plot in almost in a scattered and random fashion and piecing it together.
More like a detective.
Interesting. So sort of segment the story up and then approach it in different sections as and when gameplay dictates, rather than the story having to have a start, middle and end.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, and I think you see something of that in System Shock, Bioshock, etc., with the audio logs and that kind of thing. You're sort of piecing it together as you go. Yeah. Okay, I've written RPG here. So we've got sandboxes, which is the epitome of open world gameplay. EVE Online, you know, all that kind of thing. And then on the other hand, you've got RPG, which I suppose could be described as on rails, the linear story, the linear plot.
Yeah.
Where the story becomes much more predominant.
Not necessarily linear, but it's all plot.
Yeah. But even there, I think you can't avoid the padding, because, again, you've got the narrative only taking up so much time, and the game required to take up much longer. Would anyone stand for a 2-hour game if it was all interesting and all action for $50, you know? Or is this
People complain about ODST that it's too short.
This is a precedent that we've set for ourselves. A computer game must be at least this long, or we won't get our money's worth.
You got to play it for 10 hours or so.
So how then can you possibly keep people interested for that whole 80 hours as a single narrative story without letting them go off and whack things to pad out the time? Come back when you're level whatever, then we'll tell you a bit more about the story.
So is the fact that these games are longer actually an illusion, because the levels have been stretched out beyond what they would have been in any other medium to make them longer?
Yeah, I don't think... I think books is the sort of time-based comparison, but then, you know, the average sort of 300 to 500-page novel will have developments and things going on all the way through. You rarely have to read the same paragraph over and over 400 times in the middle of the book just to make it bigger. Well, not good authors, anyway.
How was your reading of Dan Brown going?
Yeah, okay. So, do you want to wrap up then? I think we've learnt a lot here today. I think we've learnt that the needs of the medium define what good storytelling is, and that what we have with computer game narrative is something entirely new, a new medium that has new requirements. As we mentioned earlier, a game must be a certain amount of time long, or people are going to feel cheated, particularly at the price of them, $50 for a game versus, what, $5 for a paperback?
If that.
Yeah, people having a certain sense of value for money with their entertainment needs, and computer games being quite a pricey investment, as it were, game plus console as well, or whatever, yeah. PC, they're going to want to feel they're getting their money's worth. So we're talking longer stories, more involved stories, but then how does that shake down? How do you keep people interested in a persistent narrative for up to 40 or 80 hours? And I think these are challenges that the particular medium suggests. You can't avoid the padding, I don't think. I think there's always going to be the go away, kill 100 things, then come back and we'll tell you a bit more.
Or,
but it's disguising that. It's working that into the flow.
Or doing what Metal Gear does and give you lots of video where it just spoons the plot to you, taking that time, making the game last longer with more things.
And in those cases, I think we as consumers are perhaps going to have to learn and adapt to a new kind of entertainment medium. These are not movies. These are not books. You know, this is something different. The comics, I think, lead the way. I think the comics is a very close analogy to the way computer game story pacing ought to go in the future. But again, I think there are differences even from that.
Yes.
And this is something new.
It's the fact that it's interactive.
The interactive story versus the game. Where are the lines drawn and what are the differences? I mean, BioWare generally do a very good stock in trade in this kind of thing. I mean, you'll often see BioWare cited as doing some cracking good games. COTA, of course, noted for its story. Planescape Torment, the old Black Isle days. The Baldur's Gate series. Mass Effect is another one.
Yep.
You know, I mean, yeah, I don't want to get all favouritism on one particular company. There are other fantastic stories out there, but just seeing the sort of consistent, interesting narratives that they produce is encouraging. And we're going to see this in MMO form with the Old Republic, of course, when it comes along. They're always banging on about story being the big pillar.
Yeah.
The big extra pillar of game development. Perhaps they can pull this off. Perhaps they know of what they speak.
Or will they just find that actually gamers don't really want the story? Most gamers don't care.
Do we just want to click through the quest text anyway? Interesting. What else have I got? Mature I've written here. Now, I've written mature, not in the sense of gore and sex, you know, GTA blowing people's heads off. Ooh, aren't we edgy and dangerous? Look, you can hit a man with an axe in the head, all that. But mature in terms of storytelling, mature grown-up narratives, and again, grown-up and adult are abused terms that generally mean sex or violence, but just stories that deal with morally ambiguous themes, complex themes of that nature. Do we want to see more grown-up adult fiction in our gaming? Or
I think we are.
Does that grow with the genre?
You need to wonder what adult gaming is and what mature actually is.
And it's not just sex and violence. No. But the telling of grown-up and complex tales of morality, of psychology, of the individual, the self, all that sort of thing, which generally doesn't fit into the sort of early Mario, I must rescue the princess type gameplay.
She may be in another castle as well.
Oh, God. Yeah, so anything else? I've run out of notes. I've rambled a lot.
Oh, yes, there was one point here.
Mm-hmm.
Relying on story from other media.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Something like LOTRO,
yep,
or a movie tie-in,
yeah,
will take the story from something else where the story has already been fleshed out.
And in a different medium.
In a different medium, and build on that story.
Right.
Knights of the Tor, sorry,
yeah,
is doing the same thing because
you have the existing Star Wars films as as movies. In a particular
and
story.
You have all the books, all the graphic novels, and everything else. So there is a easy shortcut to get quite a lot of plot into your game by saying, oh yes, look, it's over there, look at that.
Yeah, I mean, I've been sort of continually sort of pleasantly surprised by how the Lord of the Rings Online works with Lord of the Rings. The sort of, the always behind the scenes, the yes, you can't, you know, the sort of implicit understanding that yes, you, we know you can't take the ring to Mordor, but you can help, and, you know, then we'll write in a whole set, whole sort of parallel extra story that involves you, the player, which is an intelligent way of doing it.
And the way it also apes the books and the films.
Yes, it's sort of somewhere in, off on its own place.
Yeah.
And, that, and I think that sort of sums up the medium in general. I mean, this is a whole new thing. That we need new kinds of stories and new styles of storytelling to match this new medium, the computer game. Gosh.
Yes.
Right. So I then asked on Twitter, what good's computer game stories have you seen? Now, let me find the actual question. Podcast question. Talking about story this week, which game's plot or backstory have most entertained you, MMO or otherwise? Oh, it's gone. I've lost
it. Bottom right corner.
Bottom right corner.
Bottom right corner.
Bottom right corner.
Yeah, go into the...
Sorry, I'm a bit Mac dyslexic, to be honest. Okay, so Eric's Cho jumped in there with Monkey Island's story was very entertaining. Also, the WoW backstory is nice. Some of the novels are decent. Monkey Island, I don't think anyone would dispute that.
There's quite a lot of backlash against Monkey Island by people not liking it on the re-release.
Really? People who didn't appreciate it the first time around? People who are not of the point-and-click adventure generation?
Yeah.
Mm.
I might call them idiots.
So what style of story is Monkey Island? Is that a comic? Is that a novel? Or is that something unique to the point-and-click adventure that we just don't see much of these days?
Oh, I think cause you're always trying to deal with the next task, so it's very episodic in task-wise.
Mm, so there could be a Monkey Island comic without it jarring too much.
Yeah, It would make a bad comic.
Because it's more about the puzzle aspects, isn't it? I don't know a lot about the WoW backstory, but I'll take your word for it on the novels and such like. Also, Eve's stories with the Chronicles is good, but you don't really see a lot of that in-game. It's more a separate thing. These are all the little mini novellas they keep putting on the website, and presumably the Empyrean Age novel as well.
Yeah.
Very fleshed out. I always found them a bit irrelevant, to be honest. It was all interesting, but you never saw anything of it in-game, really.
They've started doing the odd thing that pulls it in, but they can still do
it. It was always something that ran alongside, I thought. I've got Broken Diet. Never really been one for backstories, really. See, these things need to be optional. If you're playing a game, you want the game, really.
Yeah.
I thoroughly enjoyed the Eve novel, if that counts.
That does count.
I haven't read it yet. I have to get around to that.
That's a good example of using another media to forge a story.
Yeah. Sort of do things in a novel form that you just couldn't realistically achieve in the computer game itself.
Yeah.
Hmm. Gothwalk, Planescape Torment, good man. No contest. Nothing in MMOs came close, but best of a bad lot was Gorrowind's starting area in EQ2. I think that's the Sarnax, isn't it? I've not played that, but
I was gone by then.
It sounds like an interesting narrative chaining together the early newbie area and you know, because you've got this entire race of sort of dragony people, lizard dragon people, Sarnax, and they appear out of nowhere, so you need some kind of narrative introduction to them. You need sort of an overriding quest chain, perhaps, to explain your place in the world, and that's a good way to sort of integrate new features into existing games. We got Zona 21. Aside from Planescape, COTA's quite good. Fallout 3 as well. What do we think of this Fallout 3 story? I mean, I'm trying to remember if Fallout 1 and 2 were better or worse as narrative adventures.
I quite like
adventures.
The Fallout 3 story. It goes quite well, nips through, but you do get an awful lot of feeling that you've gone off this story and are now dealing with something while, you know, there's that whole saving the world thing in the background.
Yeah, well, it's the sandbox problem, isn't it? You can walk away at any time and no one really minds. You get back to us to save the world whenever you've got a moment.
Yeah, it's like at the end. Are you ready to go do this now?
Are you sure? Are you sure you haven't got other things to do? No, I'm right. I've got a lot on. Yeah. Only MMO with good story was Earth and Beyond. It's dead. I have no idea.
I wish I'd played that.
No, I know. Lost opportunity forever. I have to take your word that it was a good story, though. Dr. Torag says, the best stories in games are ones running through my own head. I find soloing best for this. Others distract me. So, we haven't really touched on role-playing, have we?
No.
Where players, perhaps dissatisfied or unimpressed with the existing story or lack of, decide to just go and make their own up. And these MMOs, with their unchanging world and fixed backdrop, can actually work quite well with that if you're going to start writing your own stuff, writing your own characters' adventures, and living them, as it were. Sendris, COTA, Mass Effect, basically anything BioWare. Yeah. FFXI also had a good story if you could spare the time to find out. I don't think I can, to be honest, but...
Because then it's you if you want.
No, you're all right. I'm quite all right. See, Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, Neverwinter Nights, Unreal 2, DDO have a few storylines and some of them pretty good, says Kudsnik 2000. So that's good stuff there. Again, it tends to be the fantasy RPG, doesn't it? But Unreal 2, yeah? Let's see, we've got Ascenders again, also Ryzon, very intriguing backstory. Yes, a lot of people highly praise Ryzon for being quirky and different and strange and weird. I don't know about ongoing narrative, though. Again, it is an MMO, so that will happen as and when, you know, GMs can fit it in, I suppose. But Mashium says, best story in any game I've played have to be System Shock, both of them. Yes, I did enjoy those thoroughly. I mean, they were basically a sort of Die Hard in space, but, you know, the back setting and the story and the way it all weaved together, very very skillfully done. I've always appreciated the Looking Glass games, actually. I'll tell you who else do good story-driven shooters. Monolith. No One Lives Forever, etc.
It's going back a bit.
I know. I'm older than I sound. Great story that actually makes sense, unlike FF7, he says. Bevis, story, what is this story? Give me a gun or an axe and point me in the direction of bad things. There we go.
He's like that in real life too.
I know, terrible. He goes on to say, that's a joke actually. I find that games with stories of revenge grip me the most. Maybe I'm vindictive. Yeah, good. Nothing like a good revenge tale. Yeah. So they make some of the best.
It's one of the classic stories.
Yes, it makes some of the best storytelling in any medium, really. A good revenge film. I think Dune's one of them. Equilibrium's another one. The Matrix, is that a revenge story? It's more of a coming of power story, really, isn't
it? It's coming of power or revenge against the machine.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Let's see what we've got there. Ridiculo. Although recent, I must say, Mass Effect. I really like my butch lesbian cynical character. Having some fun with the dialogue choices there, clearly. But yeah, good solid ripping yarn of space opera proportions and of derring do, of the big evil extragalactic menace and your efforts to stop it. Arbitrary Genius, Grim Fandango, possibly, or that comes to mind first. I've not played it. I'm going to have to track that one down. I have heard a number of people say that it was worth looking at.
Lucas Point and Click Adventure, what's not to like?
Yeah, I think the current lull in point and click is a much detriment to our lives. Let's see, we've got there. Ridiculo again, podcast question, remind me of game characters. All Out Redneck Barbecue. Oh, there's links there. I'll have to check those later, I think. Shuttler? Arkham Asylum was great. The voice acting and scarecrow bits were great. Like any game, end was disappointing. HL2, he gets this question mark. Half-Life 2 story, yeah.
Yeah,
was good.
Half-Life
ripping,
2's
ripping
brilliant.
Narrative. Kept clipping along.
But is that to do with the story or the atmosphere?
I think a lot of that was the atmosphere, the Half-Life 2. This weird, sort of slightly futuristic Eastern European city you found yourself in for no explanation, no reason, and just sort of getting to grips with it all. I think good stories need a good backdrop, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, that slight sense of wonder, the other, the outside of it all. Let's see, you've got Zonk. Kota for sure. I like the lore in Guild Wars and WoW quite a bit as well, yeah. I got Hitchy. Honestly, there are a lot. The Warcraft series always interested me, as well as CNC. What's that? Command & Conquer?
Could be.
Possibly. And Fallen Earth. I don't know about the Command & Conquer stories. There was sort of a lot of FMV hijinks going on there. I think, yeah, because it got a bit branching based on your conquest in some of the games, and then it all starts.
And they weren't entirely consistent between sequels.
Right. It's a bit of retconning going on there. Zozo, many to choose from. Random pick of the minute. Portal, beautifully told. Plus, of course, the song. Yeah. Yes. I mean, like much else with Portal, the story was sort of elegantly minimal. There was only vague hints as to what was going on, but you sort of picked up a bit of it as you went through. Let's see, what else we got? Sentak. Saul's Discount Task Force in City of Heroes has to be one of the most amusing series of missions I've ever partaken. I don't think we've tried that. Is that a villain's? I don't know. I'll have to do a bit of research on that one. But yeah, there's some very good writing in City of Heroes if you, again, take the time to read the quest text. They give you little souvenirs and clues, which are basically walls of text which appear in your little mission inventory there. And if you don't sit down and find a moment to actually read through some of it, you might never know what was going on. Particularly if you're just crashing through missions in a large pickup group and you're not the leader, you won't even see what the briefing was. Yeah. Let's see, Argoff31. Other than FF, the Resistance 2 story on the PS3. You are fighting aliens for control of planet Earth. Resistance 2, you played that, have you?
I haven't played Resistance 2. I played Resistance 1, in which the story was not that great.
Hmm.
But Resistance 2 is one of those games I've been sort of meaning to get to.
Yeah, well, if nothing else, we're picking up some fantastic recommendations here, because we both like a good story. Ackley, King of Dragon Pass, did consume me totally for a long while with its awesome story. I have no idea what that is, but there's a link there, which I shall digest later at my leisure. Let's see, Jackson 92, Mass Effect and Lotro. Yeah, some good nominations there. Sean MC74, anything by BioWare, Mass Effect, KOTOR and Baldur's Gate, Lotro's Odyssey. I see a lot of fans for the BioWare storytelling. They're doing something right, aren't they?
They are.
They've got some people who it does click for. They understand that perhaps this difference between the different media, the unique constraints of having to tell a story in a computer game. And they've had a lot of practice as well. I think that goes right the way back to Baldur's Gate and beyond. Their canon, as it were. Eric's show again. he's happy we like his red versus blue idea. Yeah, we'll have to think of an idea for topics in the future, I think. Let's see. MJ Ukis, original IP, Eve's short stories, based on known property, Lord of the Rings, by far. I haven't even played the MMORPG. Fair enough. I'd recommend it. It does a reasonably... I'm one of these OCD-based book nerd types, and I haven't been disappointed by Lotro yet. So worth a go if you like the books. It won't let you down. Elsith says, Mass Effect and Dreamfall, The Longest Journey, were really good. Yeah. MMO-wise, nothing stands out. Yeah, so, you know, the constraints of the MMO piled on top of the constraints of the game as a medium for writing stories in, I think, is a difficult thing, a very challenging thing to get decent storytelling. Dreamfall, again, another one I have to put on my list. Ian Teen says, Asheron's Call, no question. Lotro is nice, but AC's original story arcs, particularly Bale Zaron and Martine, were incredible. Really not played enough Asheron's Call to be able to say yes or no there, but I'll definitely take your word for it. Welsh Troll, Guild Wars is rather great for lore. COX lore is a big pull for me, and interweaved connected plots and subplots between missions and contacts. Yeah, sort of the whole Tarantino multiple things going on at once style of thing. I remember being impressed with some of that in Warhammer, actually, Warhammer Online. You do some quests for one lot, and then you find yourself on the other side on an alt, on a different server or whatever, and you find a lot of the quests are just set slightly before or setting up the quest on the other side. There's a lot of interaction between story there, which is quite cleverly done, I thought. Let's see, Mr. Chu, best storyline for me was Mafia, GTA meets Godfather, you can't escape your past. Mafia?
Yeah.
Vaguely sounds familiar, yeah. Again, another one I didn't really get to. Sounds like it's got an excellent story to it there, good. Enlightened One says The Thief series, believable steampunk, all in a class of its own. Yeah, something I've always been very impressed with, the thief stories there. Some excellent storytelling within the individual narrative, but also the background, you know, the overall city, this nameless The City going on all around you. Excellent stuff. And, new follower here, Grum Helden says, Fahrenheit, Indigo Prophecy. MMO-wise, Lotro. Yeah, I've never played Fahrenheit. I'll have to, again, another one on the list. Some excellent suggestions there from all of you. Well done. I'm going to have to put together a big wish list for the coming months, I think. Catch up on some stories I'd missed. My own personal recommendation, I think I'll go with Jade Empire, which I've been playing recently on the Xbox. Very good story, and I would say better than KOTOR.
Yeah.
But by the same people, so makes no odds. What about yourself?
Oh, that's a good one, really.
Favourite MMO story? Well, not an MMO, computer game.
I'd have to say it is the Lotro one.
You reckon Lotro, the overriding story there?
Yeah.
Okay, I must actually go back and read that and find out what we did. Excellent. Thanks for that. We'll do another one next week.
Yep.
And, well, that's about it. I think we'll have to wrap up.
I think we are, yeah.
Okay, so what have you learned this week?
I've learnt that The Last Starfighter is a terrible way to model your choosing people for your Stargate program.
And I've learnt that the Xbox 360 is really very good and addictive. See you next week.
Goodbye.